Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Yeah, it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading-edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
It's time now for one of our newer shows on the network, a healing mother and daughter healing team out of Winnipeg, Manitoba. Monique and Kayla, the show is called Soul Connections. Let's go now and see what they have for us this month.
Hi, everyone. This is Monique and Kayla from Spirit Connections and Healing. So today we're really excited to talk about that we believe is a topic that is very common for parents to want to know about nowadays, especially nowadays. It is highly sensitive, gifted children. And we thought it was important to talk about that today because there are more and more gifted children being born in the generations of now. And we think it's actually quite important to discuss, you know, the traits of those children and what they're about.
Yeah, and just to have some background so that you know where we're coming from and our experience with spiritually gifted children, my mom, Monique, who was just speaking, she has two highly sensitive children, including myself and my younger sister, so we're definitely going to talk about those experiences. And I have a 7-month-old now, and I can just tell already that he's highly gifted and sensitive. And so we're kind of going to give some perspective on, you know, all throughout the stages of childhood, small child, teenagehood, adulthood, and then also babies that are born now, which is a totally kind of new spiritual technology that is being born into these children. So we're going to touch on that as well. Also, I forgot to mention that I am a teacher in my day job, so I have come across many, many gifted, sensitive children and have definitely encountered that not only in our spiritual work, but most definitely as a traditional teacher in a school.
Yes, so, okay, so sensitive children. So, yes, well, both my girls are sensitive, okay, and when we say gifted, you know, we're not saying they're any more special than anyone else. We just mean that they have naturally open, intuitive abilities. So some people have to work on their abilities to open them up, but the children that we see that are being born in this generation and even last generation, like my daughter's generations, they seem to be naturally open.
Yeah, and I mean, just like Monique mentioned, all children are connected to spirit, as are all humans. It's just that children, because they're so fresh from the spirit world, have a very keen ability to perceive the things that is conditioned by society and media and the world around us to stop believing and trusting in our own abilities. So all children generally are more attuned to the spirit world than adults generally. But like my mom said, there are some, just like any other ability, whether it's piano, dancing, some children are just born with more of a knack for it.
Exactly. So, so my experience with sensitive children as a mother. Both of my girls were and are still very sensitive in different ways. So the sensitivity varied in both of them. So especially for my youngest daughter, I mean, Kayla, you can talk about your experience
mm-hmm.
as a child perhaps
yeah.
and how you felt the
yeah.
sensitivity, and I can speak for my youngest daughter. So my youngest daughter, well, both my girls, first of all, never slept well. Never slept well. They always woke up in the middle of the night with night terrors, which are a little bit different than nightmares, and they're a little bit more rare than nightmares. Now, maybe in this generation now, it's a little bit more common, but back then...
Only, I think the statistic back then when we were young, when I first got diagnosed at age, what, 1.5, 2?
You were about four years old.
Yeah. The doctor had said only 3% of children in the world actually have night terrors.
Right, and they were very actually curious as to... You know, they were still studying the night terror phenomenon that was happening. So that was one thing my daughter, both my daughters had, was night terrors. So they were not good sleepers. Also very sensitive to their environment. Okay, so sensory, they would get stimulated very, very easily. So that went... from everything from hearing to feeling to even tasting. Like, I know my youngest daughter is has allergies to so many different things. So it's not just environmental sensitivities. It's also the overloading of the sensories that she also suffered from. So, and that goes everything from seeing, smelling, feeling, tasting. So all of those things were affected with my youngest daughter, as well as the night terrors. Very empathic. Both my girls are very, very empathic, meaning that they take in other people's energies very easily. They absorb other people's emotions. They will know immediately if a person is happy, sad, mad, jealous, envious. They can feel all those emotions. And I'm speaking about my girls, but that is for any highly intuitive child. They also, like my daughter would become, my youngest daughter would become so overwhelmed so easily in a big crowd. I could never take her shopping, literally. And if we went shopping, we'd stay 10 minutes and then she'd have to get out of the shopping mall every time. And she honestly is still like this to this day. Your youngest sister, right? She's just an ultra sensitive adult now, and that just hasn't really gone away. She's learned to manage it better, because that does cause anxiety in a child when you're so sensitive to all of that, all of the stuff going on in the environment. If you're sensitive to all that, it overstimulates you, and then you become like overwhelmed, and that's where the anxiety comes from with highly sensitive children. Meltdowns, they take in more sensory information more easily than others, also is something she went through, and as well as yourself, Kayla. Although all children have a very active imagination and creativity, sensitive children might have a little bit more of a knack for it. Kayla, you can tell me if that resonates for you as a teacher.
Yeah, they might just be a little bit more right brain. So, you know, like left is the logical, statistical, rational, spatial. And then the right brain is more of that creative side. Though having said that, of course, a spiritually gifted child could have both of those qualities. But often they'll be a little bit more pulled towards the arts. Just some place where they can really explore their imagination, because I think we've mentioned before, but our psychic senses are perceived through our imagination even as adults. So it's not surprising that highly sensitive children are going to have more experiences and utilize their imagination even more than maybe a quote-unquote normal child who also uses their imagination. Another thing is that often sensitive children, they might have an imaginary friend, quote unquote, right? Or they might talk kind of to the air according to the world. But having said that, often they are perceiving, you know, spirits in the spirit world that adults can't perceive. So if a child has an imaginary friend and you're aware of this, I would encourage you to ask questions. Oh, what does your imaginary friend look like? What is she telling you? Do you feel safe with that person? Does she make you feel comfortable? Just ask questions, because I bet that they're going to have very specific answers, and that more than likely you know, I believe is that they're actually speaking to someone that you just can't perceive.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's very true. And both you and my youngest daughter were like that. You both
really?
Could perceive spirits and
oh, yeah.
spirit energy.
I just can't
right?
remember. Like, do you remember if we had imaginary friends? I remember other things, but
I mean, you know, I don't remember exactly a specific imaginary friends,
mm-hmm.
but I definitely, like, I remember you saying I could feel like somebody was touching your skin, and for my youngest daughter, she could always feel spirits around her, like from day one, and she had spirits coming to her through very
mm-hmm.
vivid dreams, and she still does to this day. So that's just how they communicate with her.
Yeah, totally. And another thing is that children might tell you that people are walking through your house. Like, I remember when I was young, I would hear what I thought were my parents downstairs in the living room watching TV, talking, and I would wake up and want comfort and go see them, and they were sleeping in bed and no one was downstairs. So, and like my mom mentioned, I would feel almost like people smoothing my blankets as I was going to sleep, and it felt nice and safe. So I believe they were, you know, family members that had crossed. But I could always perceive things more so in the clairsentient sense, which means that I could feel them physically. So I actually, like, physically could feel the smoothing of my blankets, whereas some children might see a little bit more in their clairvoyance, or, you know, there's different ways that we can perceive those things.
Right, and it sounds like your clairaudience also was developing
at
that time, because
mm-hmm.
you could hear
yes.
people talking, you could hear, like,
mm-hmm.
the TV was on, and then nobody was there. So that is your clairaudience opening up at a very young age.
Another quality that I just thought of is that sometimes sensitive children or psychic children or gifted children in general might just know things. Like, for example, they might just tell you something that is about to happen or just happened that they had no knowledge of. Like, they might, you might mention your friend and they might say, oh yeah, they got a new car, and
right.
they're maybe going to get a new car the next day. Like, they might just start to say things that you're like, what? How did they know that? But that's because they're picking up on their psychic abilities, and to them, it's not strange or different. It just comes to them. It might be downloaded or whatever way they perceive it, and they just say it, right? Because they don't have those blocks with their intuition until later. And, I mean, hopefully now we're going to raise a generation that just continues to be able to use their gifts all throughout their lives, which is going to be exciting, because they won't have to go through that unlearning process that we've had to go through, right? We perceive things, we're very intuitive as children. Society teaches us that that's not real, it's just our imagination or whatever they might say. Then as adults, when we realize, there maybe was something to that, we have to unlearn all of these things that society has taught us to reconnect to our intuitive abilities. Which, you know, is okay. That's our journey and our soul chose that. But it's going to be nice for this future generation to just be able to use their intuitive abilities from babyhood, childhood, and moving all the way forward, which is going to be great.
Okay, and another trait of highly intuitive children is that they usually always have a very special and strong connection to animals and the plant world as well. So they love being out in nature. Nature nurtures them. You know, it keeps them balanced. It keeps them centered. And it really helps to calm them down. So if you have an overstimulated child, go outside with them. Have them play outside on the grass. Even if it's winter, dress them up. Take them for a sleigh ride. Whatever it is, they need to be outdoors and around nature, these types of children, which I'm sure a lot of the parents that have highly sensitive children have already discovered. Also, they are highly sensitive to animals, like I mentioned. And, I think about my youngest daughter, who has always needed a pet. Some kind of pet in her life. We have had so many different pets. We have had.
And you're not even an animal person.
I'm not an animal person. I gotta say. I mean,
Neither am I.
We have two dogs, and I love my dogs. But you know what? I'm not drawn to animals. But we had hamsters, rabbits.
Yeah. Two cats.
Yeah, she took horseback riding lessons. Like, it was all about the animals, and it just helped to calm her down. She loves her cat. Like, her cat is literally, to this day, she's still very connected to cats, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, all animals are very intuitive, but cats are highly intuitive. You know?
And highly intelligent.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And dogs, dogs too, obviously. But, yeah. So it's very interesting how that works. But it's almost like they share the same type of energy.
Yeah. So, and now I'm going to just talk about another trait that highly gifted children might demonstrate. And that being that you might observe in them what some might consider quote-unquote behavioral issues, or sometimes they might be labeled with ODD, oppositional deficient disorder, ADHD, autism. Now, we want to preface this by saying that, of course, you always go to a medical professional to receive a diagnosis if that's what you feel is right, but all we're saying from our experience is that it can be helpful to understand the spiritual component to these labels to assist your children in a more holistic way if that feels right to you. Now, some children, they may need medication if that feels right to you. As the parent, you know best. Always trust and follow your intuition. If that feels best, then yes, they can take medication, but it might be of assistance to you to know some of the ways spiritually and holistically that you can also help them. Being a teacher, I have, of course, have worked with many, many children with a variety of labels or disorders, and it's been very helpful for me, though I cannot share my spiritual beliefs in an overt way in the school system, because, of course, that would be considered, you know, infringing upon people's right to religion and spirituality and belief systems. But just having the knowledge inside and being able to interact with my students from that background has been incredibly helpful, very, very helpful. And, you know, sometimes, actually more often than not, when I talk to these children, they will tell me things like, yeah, I can see things or I hear things or whatever else. And to me, I know inside, just based on being the person I am and using my own intuitive abilities, that, you know, they are tapping in to the spirit world. And so if you know a child in your life that's struggling with any of these things, it might be a good idea to consider the spiritual background on that. And another thing is that when children are overstimulated, like we discussed, highly sensitive children being very, very sensitive to their environment, it overwhelms them. And what do? When we're overwhelmed, well, we act out because we're trying to self-regulate, we're trying to cool down. But children have to be taught self-regulation skills. So as a teacher, my job is to help them to develop strategies that are going to help them be able to self-regulate their emotions and their feelings. And we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that you can do to help a highly gifted and sensitive child in a little bit. Next, we're going to just kind of mention the STAR children, which you may or may not have heard of, and my mom is going to start by talking about indigo children. So STAR children, just in case someone isn't aware, STAR children are just the kind of general name for the different categories of children that we're going to talk about. But basically, STAR children means that they came here with a mission to help transform Earth to a higher consciousness. So now my mom's going to talk about indigo children to start.
Okay, so indigo children. So I have a indigo child. And I believe I was an indigo child as well.
Not me, my youngest sister.
Yeah. No, not Kayla. They're both, they have different energies. So anyway, my youngest daughter is definitely an indigo. So indigos, the traits of indigos are one of them that, and I'm going to go according to my own daughter here, and stubborn, okay? So very stubborn, set in their ways. So they can be, if they believe in something or if they have their mind made up about something, it is very difficult to change that. So that is one trait of an indigo, or a trait that my indigo child had, definitely. You question authority. That was another thing that I had with my youngest. And that is also a trait of an indigo child. The trait of the indigo child is they are huge advocates, or we can call them change makers as well. So things like animal rights, environmental issues, even government issues, you will often see indigos powerfully advocating for what they believe to be, you know, their truth and what they believe in. So they're very strong in that sense as well. Creativity, of course, is, like I say, every child is very creative, but indigo children or spiritually gifted children will perhaps have just a little bit of a stronger sense musically or creatively or artistically as well. So I know with my youngest daughter, although with you, Kayla, that's huge as well. You are very creative. She has a huge ability to do art, Kayla, as well as dancing and singing. And I know my youngest daughter also loves to dance and is creative in that sense as well. Another trait for indigo children is they will often be labeled as with a learning disability. So whether that's ADD, ADHD, autism, or some type of autism or learning disability, that is often a trait in indigo children. It's not like set in stone, but it often is. And indigo children, and this is strong, that was very strong with my daughter, is feeling lost. So just this sense of them being different, feeling out of place, you know, on this earth plane. They tend to isolate, they're loners, and that's totally my youngest daughter. She's very much an isolator. And she would always say the phrase, she started saying that honestly when she was 3 or 4 years old, I want to go home. And I could never understand that back then because we were home. And she would always say when she was upset or crying, I want to go home, I want to go home. And at that time, I didn't have the awareness that I have now of indigo children and all of that knowledge. And when I started realizing that my child was an indigo child a few years later, that is actually a trait of indigo children, that exact phrase is that they will say, often indigo children will say, I want to go home. And what that means is that their soul is longing to be back on the other side. Although they know that they have work to do here and that they are meant to stay on the earth plane, of course, it is difficult for them to be here because their spirit is so close to the other side, so to speak. So that phrase is huge with my youngest daughter. Of course, indigo children are also very highly psychic. Their abilities are fine-tuned. Like we said, you know, earlier, some kids are just born with their abilities a little bit more open than others. So indigo children certainly have that trait. And another trait of an indigo child, even though that happens with every children or every child, is they get frustrated and overwhelmed very easily. And we talked about that earlier. And that's, you know, often because of sensitivities that they have to live with. So that are these are the traits of indigo children.
So the next group of star children that I'm going to talk about, just because I am a crystal child, so I know it a little bit, is crystal children. And sometimes you'll read or hear that crystal children came from indigo children, but they definitely can also be on the same generational line as well. It's not always the case. It's just that the indigos tended to incarnate sooner than the crystal. However, like I said, they can still be on the same generational line, just like me and my sister, and I'm actually older than my sister. But they often say that indigo children or crystal children are going to give birth to crystal children, which is kind of interesting. So crystal children, similarly to indigo children, are spiritually gifted, very, very sensitive to their environments, mentally and physically. They might suffer from allergies and sensitivities, which I discovered later in life I also have a whole bunch of allergies I didn't know of. So often they're sensitive to their environment. One of the biggest differences is that an indigo child tends to have a warrior type spirit, whereas the crystal children have a much more gentle energy naturally. So that's one of the main differences between my sister and I, her being an indigo, me being a crystal, and neither of them being better or worse, both just different energies with different purposes, is that she has a much stronger energy in terms of that warrior spirit, very stubborn, all of those things we mentioned, whereas I tend to be a little bit more gentle in my energy. Another thing is that crystals like me are very affectionate. So like I love hugging, I love touching people. I even, it's really weird actually, when I'm walking beside someone, I don't mean to, but I literally magnetize, like my body runs into them. And I've done this my whole life and I didn't know why. And people would be like, whoa, like you're running into me. Can you walk a little bit further away? And I honestly like don't notice I do it, but like I want to be close to people. And that's because crystal children are very empathic and they just want to be connected to people. So they just sometimes lack those personal boundaries. So they have to definitely learn to have energetic and physical boundaries. Crystal children are often healers. So they're going to be gravitating towards the healing arts, whether it's Reiki or Theta Healing. Like I've mentioned in past radio shows, I felt the call to get trained in Reiki when I was 15 or 16, which is very young and kind of a weird thing to do for a teenager, but I just like felt compelled to go into the healing arts. So that's another interesting thing. Often they're very drawn to music and singing, and like my mom mentioned, like I've been a singer my whole life. I absolutely adore singing, music, piano, all of those things. And kind of similarly to indigo children, but a little bit manifested differently, crystal children often have a tendency towards anxiety and sometimes mental health issues for the same reasons as indigo, just because they're you know, more sensitive and easily overwhelmed. So I definitely struggled with anxiety in childhood, and then in early adulthood it got really, really, really bad, and then that forced me to really get on my healing journey. So the next group of children that we're going to talk about are rainbow children, which it's possible that you've heard a lot about indigo and crystal children, but rainbow children are actually the next group of lightworker children that are incarnating on Earth in order to help the ascension process. And these children, really, I'm pretty positive from what I've researched or what I've learned about, is that they're all for sure born after 2000. It's possible maybe a couple forerunners came a little bit before that, because that can happen sometimes, but mainly they're coming and incarnating after 2000, and even a lot after 2010. So, for example, I just had a baby this year, and I have a strong feeling he's a rainbow child. I actually had a friend who's a light worker and a healer actually mention that without me even saying anything as well. So that was pretty interesting. But their traits are very interesting. The first thing is that rainbow children often come to crystal and indigo parents, so that they have parents who are spiritually minded, hopefully if they've done their inner work and gotten to that space. But rainbow children are choosing harmonious homes. So that's one of the big differences, is that often indigo and crystal children incarnated into whatever household was going to be best for their learning. So whether an indigo was born into a family that was dysfunctional, luckily that wasn't the case for us, but I know a lot of indigo children are, because part of their lessons are how to break free of those boundaries. And they came here to change family dynamics, environmental things, political systems. So often they were born into those situations where they would have the opportunity to do that. So that's the main difference, is that rainbow children are choosing specifically balanced and harmonious homes. Also, I've learned, and I think this is pretty interesting, is that rainbow children have not incarnated on Earth before. So they don't have the earthly karma, so to speak, quote unquote, if you want to call it that. That doesn't mean they haven't incarnated on other planets. I think most definitely they have, because they're very evolved souls, but this is their first time on Earth from what I've read and heard about rainbow children, which is pretty interesting. Often the rainbow children, like all of the star children, are going to be for sure sensitive, highly psychic, but often these children are very positive, happy, enthusiastic, because they don't have that kind of earthly baggage to come in with, which is pretty interesting. Another thing that I've learned is that often they're going to be speaking telepathically, or they don't necessarily require words at first, and they can communicate just through thought and through look. So if you can be in tune with your baby or your child that could be a rainbow child, that's for sure going to be helpful. And their job here, so indigos were here to shake things up, to go against systems that weren't working. Crystal children are here to be healers, channelers of the earth. And then their job here is to spread joy, peace, and happiness, and to invite others to live a life in joy. So it's kind of cool, and I'm really interested to see how my son manifests that energy, whether he is or he isn't. I think it'll be really cool to see what he does in his future and what his traits are. Just a couple other traits before we move on to the next thing is that often the rainbow children are going to have the natural desire to help others. They feel very deeply connected to nature, and often they have high energy levels. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes these children don't necessarily require as much sleep as other children because their vibrations are so high that they don't always need sleep. Now, that's one part that I'm hoping doesn't manifest in my son, because I'd like him to sleep so that I could get more sleep. Anyways, now we're going to move on to how we can actually help these children to flourish, to ground their energy, and to feel a little bit safer and more connected in this world.
So there are things that parents can do to help your gifted children. So the one thing that you can do is to absolutely let them know that what they see, feel, hear, and sense is okay, and it's not scary, or it's not that it is normal. So you want to kind of normalize what they feel and sense, because they sense every, and I'm talking right now, I'm talking about basically when they feel and sense energy and spirit around them. So it's important to not you know, tell them that this is their imagination, you know, you're hearing things, you're just feeling things, there's nothing in your room. It's important to give them a sense of protection, but at the same time empowering them by letting them know that it's okay that you're feeling this and it is normal. So if they do feel a spirit, they do feel a loved one, you know, from the other side, you know, tell them to, you know, maybe say hi and talk to grandma, or it's just grandma, you know, looking over them or protecting them. So you want to word it in a way that it doesn't frighten the child, because your child will feel frightened and a little bit scared when they feel and sense things they don't understand. But normalizing it and just not making a big deal about it is really the easiest way to do it. That's kind of how I did it with my two girls. I normalized it. You know, I never told them, no, there's nothing in your room, that's not true. So I made them feel that it was okay to sense and feel energy and spirits. Another thing that you can do to help your child maybe feel more protected and empowered is to, you know, I call it the bubble game, I guess, for children. You want to make it fun and light, and just have them visualize or sense a bubble of light around them for protection before they go to bed. So you can get them to choose the bubble, the color of the bubble. So this is something that you can do with your child before putting them down. It just gives them, like I say, a sense of protection that they are able to do something to help them with all of these things that they don't understand and feel and sense. So the bubble game is always a fun thing to do with your child. Also, music, like soft, relaxing music, can also help a child calm down and just go to sleep with a sense of more peacefulness. So, you know, and I'm sure a lot of parents probably already do that, but I do feel that that's also an important thing, because music always feeds our soul, right? Calms us down.
Yeah, all those things are great things to do, as well as we mentioned earlier, but really bringing them out in nature as much as possible, because nature is a way for them to ground their energy. Often star children are going to be highly connected through their top chakras and very connected to spirit, and they need to learn how to come into their bodies and to ground their energy. That's definitely something I learned. I know that with my son, as he's a baby, he's 7 months old, so he can't consciously do any of this for himself. So I do certain practices every day, and I'll just kind of go over them in case anyone has a baby that they feel is highly sensitive, that this might be beneficial to hear. But for example, in his first nap in the morning when I'm rocking him, I will do a total grounding kind of meditation, and I just say it out loud. And it's funny because as soon as I start talking, it's like though he's a baby and he might not consciously understand on a human level the words, I know he understands the energy of it and that he feels the benefits to it. So what I do is I just out loud, I talk about cleansing and clearing our chakras in the morning. So first I'm going to ground down into Mother Earth, connecting to that energy, bringing the energy up, and then I go and through and I name them to cleanse and clear all of the chakras, and then connect all the way up to the creator, spirit, whatever you want to call it. And then like my mom mentioned, I create the bubble of protection around him and I for the whole day. So that's the very first thing that I try to do in the morning, just to make sure that we start our day off right. And also it's an added benefit that it kind of gives me a tiny little meditation, because, you know, being a new mom, I struggle to kind of find the balance because he's still so young. So it gives me a way to ground my energy as well. And then at night, what I do is I do the same thing, except I first connect to the spirit world or to creator, the divine first, and then I come down and I cleanse and clear and close for the evening our chakras, starting with the crown chakra, going all the way down to the root, and then again connecting to Mother Earth, putting the bubble around us. Then I invite in his spirit guides, his angels, his ancestors, maybe any ascended masters you're connected to. I know I call upon Archangel Michael and Raphael to help him in his sleep. So those are things that you can do with babies that can be helpful, as well as just being conscious of your environment. So if you're in a crowded space, or I know my baby is very, very sensitive to sound, so I'll just, even though, again, maybe on a conscious level he isn't completely understanding, I know that me explaining things to him is still preparing him for it energetically. So I just try to let him know ahead of time, okay, I'm going to put the blender on, but I'll hold you and it's okay. Because, you know, even just the coffee maker can make him like gasp, and he gets so shocked and scared about it. So it's pretty cute, but I want him to feel safe in that as well. And some things that as a teacher I want to mention can be really helpful, especially if there's a child that may have received a diagnosis in ADHD or autism, is having visual schedules for them. So sometimes for these children, even if they don't have a diagnosis, they tend to get overwhelmed easily. So you really want to help them as the parent or the caregiver have things lined up and written out step by step. And having that visual is going to be very helpful for them. So even things that we consider simple and a routine, like our morning routine as adults, we get up, maybe the first thing we do is go to the bathroom, then we get dressed, then we eat our food, we make our coffee, we brush our teeth. Whatever it might be. For children, especially gifted, sensitive children, they don't necessarily have the ability to retain those routines, and they can get easily overwhelmed. So what you can do is you could just print little pictures off the internet, or even draw them with your child, involve them in the process. They absolutely love this. I know as a teacher I've done this many times, but really put those visual images out there for them so that they see it listed. So you put the first image. You can even like write down on your paper, whatever it might be. You might get it laminated. It'll be like step one, step two, step three. And don't have more than two or three on one page, because that's going to overwhelm them. And again, I'm talking right now about children, toddlers to about seven or eight. That's kind of what I'm referring to at this point. But it can be adapted for older children and adults as well. But step one is get out of bed and we go to the bathroom. Step two is you go down to the kitchen and you're going to have your breakfast, etc. But really simple things like this can make a huge difference, because I'm sure you've noticed if you have a sensitive child in their life, giving them instruction can be very, very challenging. So that's just a little tip that might help you to allow them to have a little bit more ease with any routines. And also another thing that I would like to point out is that they need a lot of preparation for transitions. So in the classroom, for me, that looks like, you know, for moving from math in the classroom to going to phys ed, gym class, they need to know that in advance to have preparation and to know ahead of time in order for them to feel comfortable. So often I'll use a visual schedule in the classroom, or I'll just make sure to go over to them and say, okay, just so you know, in about 10 minutes, we're going to be moving to the gym. And even just little things like that, letting them know ahead of time, it can really help to ease their anxiety. Because for us, we think, oh, yeah, that's fine, okay, we move from math and then we go to the gym. But for highly sensitive children, depending on your specific child, that can be a huge trigger of anxiety. So these are just simple tools that you might try and might find beneficial in your life with your child. Another tool that could be helpful is to get books that are spiritually minded. And honestly, you can just Google it. There's actually a surprising amount of new literature for children coming out to help them understand their abilities or their sensitivities or the spirit world, if that's what you would like your children to know about. One title that comes out of the top of my head is The Little Soul in the Sun by Neil Donald Walsh, who's the author of Conversation with God, if you've ever read that. But that's a really beautiful book that explains the journey from being in the spirit world to choosing to incarnate on earth. It's so beautiful. And he has a few other children's books too. There are also books about meditation or yoga, Yoga and Me. And that's just a really nice way to include, whether it's in your bedtime routine or in the classroom or whatever it might be.
Okay, so now that we've covered the books that would be a good thing to buy if you're interested in further understanding your intuitive child, we're going to talk a little bit about how to nurture those intuitive children and their abilities. So, and of course you have to keep it age appropriate, but one thing you could do is maybe take your child to a crystal shop, a metaphysical shop, and just allow them to pick stones that they're drawn to. You know, maybe they'll like the color, maybe they'll like the shape, and it'll just give me a sense, it'll give them a sense of empowerment to be able to have that stone, and they might feel comfortable having it under their pillows when they sleep, or maybe beside their bed.
Yeah, that actually kind of reminds me of with my students for Christmas one year, I bought 4 different types of stones that had different purposes. So say I had rose quartz, and then I had clear quartz, and a couple others, or one was black tourmaline, and I forget the other, oh, I think it was amethyst. So I got the children to put their hands in the bag and to pick, and I explained, you know, you're going to get the stone that you need that's going to help you, and I had printed out all of the descriptions, and they loved that. And, you know, it doesn't have to be religious or spiritual belief system to enjoy crystals, right? So my students absolutely loved that, but I knew on a spiritual level that they were going to attract and choose the stone that they needed most, and then they would, you know, bring it with them in their pocket or whatever, and they just loved it.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. And it's fun for them, right? You know, because that's a fun thing to pick, a different colored stone. And they're so pretty. Some of them are just really eye-catching. So that's a great thing to do with your children. Another thing would be to, you know, if you're okay with it, let them play with maybe oracle or angel cards. You know, just let them look at them and let them freely talk about them and just see what they say about them. Intuitive abilities can be fostered through, you know, the angel or oracle cards.
Yeah, and I have an example of that as well, just with my baby who's, you know, 7 months. You know, in the morning time, sometimes I'll just give him the deck of cards and I'll just see which one he picks up, because even though he might not consciously understand yet, you know, that he's attracting the card he needs, I find it really interesting as the parent to see what card he picks up.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And it can also give the parent a clue as to maybe what the focus of the day or the week might be with your child. So it's kind of something that not only helps your child, but helps you to better understand where they're at energetically for the day. So I find that kind of fun.
Yeah, that's actually a very good idea. Yeah. So playing intuitive games could be something that would be fun for you and your child. Maybe hiding something around the house and asking your child where they see, feel, hear, or sense that it is. You know, closing their eyes and just seeing what they see or feel when they close their eyes. Maybe they'll see color, maybe they'll have a word pop up or maybe a name.
You can put items in a box as well. I know we've done this in a couple of our workshops, but
right, yeah.
Putting mystery items in a box and then getting your child to feel into what they think might be in the box, and maybe they'll get a color, maybe they'll get a shape, maybe they'll get the actual specific thing. But the more and more you do this, just like with adults, but children tend to catch on even faster. But the more and more you do this, the more they're developing their psychic abilities and that muscle, as we say.
Yeah, no, exactly. No. So that's, so it just, and it's fun for the kids, you know. Games are always fun, and it's kind of like a guessing game for them, but it really, you know, does nurture their abilities.
Or what we used to do, Mom, you used to do that card game with me. Do you remember? We would play that together back and forth on the couch. So my mom would... we would both, so we would each pick a card in the deck of cards, and my mom would say it in her mind, and she would ask me to try to, what I felt she was saying telepathically in her mind.
Like guessing the color, guessing the color of the car, red or black?
Yeah, red or black, but even like whether it was spades or clubs, and then even the number. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I totally do remember
that.
That
was so fun.
Yeah. No, and there's another way, it's playing cards, because there's a lot of different ways you can go there, right?
Just simple things, but kids find that so fun, because I remember as a child, like, even though it's just a deck of cards, like, finding that very entertaining.
Yeah, and even as adults, I mean, adults can use all these ways to nurture their own intuitive abilities as well. And also, like, the way that parents react to children's intuitive abilities is also really important. So not making like a big deal about them, so not making them feel like they're, you know, special and above everyone else, but at the same time not ignoring the abilities and not making them feel like, you know, they don't exist or that it's not normal. So just, I like to say, normalizing their experiences and their abilities is probably the best way to react, you know, just kind of staying neutral about it.
I like how you mentioned not to make it seem like they're above or more special, because the reality is that whether or not a child or an adult has an affinity towards psychic abilities, just like any other talent in the world, no one is better or worse. Everyone is just unique, and everyone brings their own gift to this world. So I really like that you brought that up, because I totally
agree. Yeah, I think it's important, because we, you know, as much as we want to nurture our children's psychic abilities, and it's because it's exciting, and you know, it's something that is going to help them in their life, because it's going to help guide them. We need to, you know, keep them kind of grounded and down to earth about it. So that's for sure important. What else? And then paying attention to your child's physical health, obviously, you would do that anyway. And also, like, and it can affect the mental health as well, in terms of, you know, if your child is having angry outbursts, can have mood swings, sometimes unexplained aches and pains, or he or she is reacting to a constant flow of feelings and information from the outside world. So often when the child is experiencing all of these things, right, anger outbursts, mood swings, unexplained aches and pains, again, bring them to the doctor for sure. You want to always make sure that there is nothing wrong with your child. In terms of, you know, having a physician check them, but it's often energy. So it's often the way they're reacting to the constant flow or the constant inflow of feelings and information from the outside world. So so that can cause.
Oh yeah.
Honestly, I remember my youngest daughter always, and I feel you also went through that. Always had a headache, a stomach ache. Always sore somewhere, like all the time, and we'd get her checked out. She had tons of headaches. I remember she even got an MRI once because she had so many headaches. They never found anything wrong with her, ever. So you know, that's a reaction that can happen with energy and a child just being overwhelmed by the too much sensory information or, you know, that they're receiving. So what
definitely.
Do you think about that, Kayla?
No, I agree, and I mean, like, you know, even me as an adult have had that experience with my health anxiety and feeling physical sensations all the time. And, you know, I would go to the doctor and get it checked out and nothing was ever there. And turns out it was, you know, energy. And now I'm better able to acknowledge or understand where that's coming from, and you can teach your children that too. So of course, like my mom said, like Monique said, always bring your child to a physician to make sure that there's nothing on the physical level that needs to be done. But if all the tests come back negative, then it's helpful and empowering to help your child that, okay, when you get this feeling, especially if it's something chronic that occurs a lot, which it typically tends to be, just know that this means that maybe you need to ground your energy, and you're going to teach them techniques. And they might even see that sometimes these symptoms or these aches or pains start to dissipate as they use their techniques and strategies that you're encouraging them to use.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's all, and we did talk about that earlier. That's all under the umbrella of energetic shielding, energetic cleansing, the bubble of light thing. Mm-hmm. So all of these things definitely are important to teach your child. And these children also need to learn healthy ways to just manage their stress and not take on other people's emotions as their own. So, mm-hmm. you know, just learning healthy coping mechanisms or tools is, you know, important. Besides all the energetic maintenance, you know, they also would need to learn healthy techniques or tools. So that might be able to be helped through maybe a mental professional, you know, mental health professional that are qualified.
Yeah, and one more thing that I just thought of as you were speaking is, as your child gets older, and even at a young age in an age-appropriate way, it's really important to teach your child ethics with their abilities and to be responsible. So just like we're taught as adults that you just don't go up to a random stranger and say, oh, I sense this, this, or this, even whether it's positive or negative, helping your child to understand that everyone has free will, and that if one day they ever did readings, for example, or even if they don't, that they out of respect for other people's choices and beliefs, that it's important to not just blurt out every single thing that they sense, feel, or see, because that might not be what the person that they're interacting with needs or wants in that moment. So, and it's, you know, it's harder with younger kids, and you're probably going to have moments where they do that, and for sure to not make them feel guilty or shameful about it, because it is a gift, but just slowly as they get older and older, teaching them ethics in psychic and mediumship abilities, and just making sure that they're cognizant of that. Yeah. So we're happy that you guys tuned in today to listen to us. We always have a lot of fun discussing these topics, and we find that once we choose a topic, it kind of just flows out and we move from one point to the next, and it's always a very enlightening conversation for us as well. So we benefit a lot from it, and we hope you do too. So as always, we hope that if you guys feel compelled to, or if you resonate with what we're talking about, or would like to connect with us in any way, that you can for sure go to our website, which is www.spiritconnectionsandhealing.com. Also find us on Facebook, just under Spirit Connections and Healing, and we have a lot of interaction on there with our followers. There's some Facebook Live, some card pulls, all sorts of different things that we like to do. We also have an Instagram account, and that handle is at Spirit Connections and Healing, and you can also find some inspiration on there. So again, we'll just remind you of some of the things that we offer. We offer mediumship readings, psychic readings, intuitive guidance sessions, if you're feeling like you need a little bit more guidance and would like to have a back and forth conversation with us. We offer Reiki, Theta healing, angel card readings, and all of our services are listed on our website. So, and important to note that especially during these times, that all of our services are most definitely offered online. And yeah, we love to connect with you guys. So thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you, everyone. It was a lot of fun talking about intuitive children today.
All right. See you later.
You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's News.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.